So just for the listeners, introduce yourselves.
Chris, I play trumpet.
I'm Ryan, I play saxophone.
Dave, and I sing.
Nice, nice. All right, so this isn't your first time at Warped Tour. Are there any lessons that you guys have learned in times past and stuff that you guys are applying for this year?
For other bands?
Concert goers? Just any advice in general, I guess.
For bands, I would say don't do it in a van. You can do lots of tours in a van. Don't do Warped Tour in a van if you're doing more than 3 or 4 days. It's just really grueling on the body, and be careful. And for fans, I don't know, you guys good?
If you don't have water in your hand, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And thank God for the free water this year.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've done those in the years past, actually, because, I mean, this is my 10th year, and I've not seen the clean canteen, at least, in that
year. Oh, yeah, I think they're fairly new.
So I got one myself. Like, it was like $4.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet.
No longer are they enslaving not Warped Tour, but it's more the concert grounds.
Like $6 for a bottle of water. It used to be like 5 years ago, so.
Yeah.
So next question. I'm curious, what was the inspiration for Fluent and Stroll? I actually personally like that album a lot. But
a lot of people do. Like, we actually got more trouble, if you will, flack, for Strictly Rude than we got for Fluent and Stroll.
Really?
Yeah, because when we went from How It Goes to Strictly Rude, we kind of went from spastic punk beats with ska to more of like groove-oriented ska.
Okay.
And people were much more rude to our face. But people think that the jump from Strictly Rude to Fluent and Stroll was actually our, you know, crazy changing of the times. No one really gave us People Say What You Say. I like that record. People always say that, but there's this kind of ambiance of not liking the record. I think a couple people reviewed it poorly and people think it didn't do well, but when you're face to face with people much more are gracious to that record than Strictly Rude. But to answer your question, we did Fluent and Stroll because we couldn't write Strictly Rude 2 at the time. Okay. You know, it's like we could write the songs that the fans exactly want. We can write Five Kids Down 5 times. But unless we want to, that's taking advantage of the fans. That's marketing. That's figuring out demographics. And, you know, we can be probably a bigger band than we want to with songwriting, but we just want to write the songs we want to write. Cool. And at that time, we didn't want to write another ska song if it wasn't in us. So we did Flute and Stroll, and we wrote a whole style of music that we personally like to listen to. You know, we like old 50s songs with backup singers and... a lot of reggae has a lot of cool backup singers, so we were trying out different groups, and I think as time moves on, it's actually going to be one of our more celebrated records. Yeah.
Cool.
Long-winded day.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Strictly Rude too. I guess some people who are more like diehard fans seem to find errors and flaws from sometimes.
Diehard fans are usually cool. The naysayers.
Oh, it's the people who kind of jump on board?
Well, what you're saying, you're about to describe, what you were about to describe, because you said diehard fans.
I did. And
diehard fans usually are cool with us.
Okay.
It's the naysayers who I think you were just about to describe.
Yes.
People who find flaws.
That's what I was trying to say. But that's what I was pretty much going to say.
I'm just backing my fans up.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. This has actually become a common thing. Every now and then I'll be sitting at the merch table, like helping out our merch guy and stuff, and someone will come up and just compliment us on the diversity and almost like, you know, the unique pattern that our discography has taken.
Yeah.
And they'll just be like, wow, thank you for making, you know, this album, this album, this album, this album, this album. I can listen to all of them and just be totally entertained
by
all of them, as opposed to feeling like I'm just listening to the same album over and over again.
And like Fox News, you gotta really just look at it like from above everything. And you look at some magazines or websites who put down Fluent and Stroll and say that it's not what we're known to do. Right. And then you put out for the Damn the Dumb Delirious and they go, yeah, this is what they're known to do, but God, it's just not as good as the creativity of Fluent and Stroll. Do you know what I'm saying? So nobody knows jack.
You just do what you love to do, and just whatever comes to you naturally.
Yeah.
It's basically, it's just
whatever
flows. I'll
put a poker in the ass of internet journalism and journalism. I don't think anybody's writing anything. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, I think that everyone's just kind of having a good old sewing circle gossip fest.
Sure.
So just don't listen. That's why we stick to the fans, and we just kind of press on.
Totally. So that kind of leads into the next question about the new album for the Damn Dumb Little Delirious. It's pretty energetic. What inspired the stylistic shift?
I think we, you know, we did Flew and Stroll and we toured on it, you know, pretty heavily like we normally do, and I think at that exact moment we wanted a little bit of a, you know, like a little like kick in the pants, like kind of, you know, stir things up a little more, kind of play some faster stuff. Because we, with Flew and Stroll, we started to separate like thrash stuff from like, you know, ska groove kind of stuff. And we were talking about doing different albums and like separating it. And, you know, we probably just didn't get enough of the fast song, like energetic stuff with Flew and Stroll.
Yeah.
So, you know, we toured Flew and Stroll, and, you know, we wanted to kind of get some more excitement into it. So, you know, we started writing, you know, some faster, heavier songs, like on, like you'll find on the Damn Dumb Delirious.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Yeah, after the Flew and the Stroll tour, I think it was kind of our most drinking tour we've ever had. We had the girls with us and the Dope of Dollies, and that just kind of, like, keeps drinking happening.
Yeah.
It certainly turns into kind of like a constant party. But I think for the groove, the tempo difference in Flew and the Stroll, like Ryan was saying, it's like, you know, our other stuff was faster. And now suddenly on stage, some of our new songs are slower. And I think we tried to speed them up by just drinking. And we were like, all right, now I understand it. This is harder to play. You know? But you know, I think by getting everything more lively, everything's more lively. And on tour, we like to be things.
And plus, like 2 years, it was 2 years from that point. You know, 2 years is a lot of development in a band.
Sure.
Hopefully. It should be.
Should be.
Unless you write the same record every time. Which we don't, but you know, like 2 years is there's a lot of stuff going on, you know, that kind of, you know, you discover new bands and hey, listen to this is what I'm into, and you know, 2 years, you know, you kind of grow a lot as a band. So, you know, we definitely took a turn back into, you know,
it was a blast
doing whatever.
Very cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It's interesting that we don't have one punk song at Flew. I mean, it's not interesting, but it is interesting. Yeah. Mm. So we leased through Hell on Earth and Strictly Rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those ones.
I thought it was two.
So, even though you guys have been around since like the mid 90s, when Strictly Rude came out in 2007, that album seemed to really bring a wide audience. Was there ever a time when it got kind of discouraging? And if so, how did you guys fight through it?
I would say all the time.
All the time?
Strictly Rude in this record. Not discouraging, but never pretty.
Okay. I'm sure it's always a constant struggle.
Well, we were finally on, like, a bigger label with Strictly Rude, and, you know, you kind of get into that world and stuff, but... And the shows were good. We just tried to keep doing what we normally do, and...
Okay.
It's always people saying, ska's dead, ska's dead, ska's dead, but we have awesome shows all the time, all the time, all the time. So it's just that stuff, you know, that people are saying things that aren't reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whoa, so is it so hard to be in a ska band after No Doubt? And it's like, no. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just what people perceive. It's always been kind of like, I mean, no, we are not Alexis on Fire.
Right.
But, you know what I mean? Like, yes, that is not happening in our band, but it's always kicking ass. I mean, until you go to Germany and you have a huge crowd of people singing the words, and then you go to England and then Czech Republic and then Slovenia, And then you read a review saying, so what is it like that Ska's dead and everything sucks for you? And you're like, dude, I don't know how to answer this question because it's like it's a misleading question, you know? So
yeah.
Everything's just been pretty solid. I mean, cool. No, we don't make money at our band. But we get to go to different countries and make music. We're like a, you know, like a traveling, like, musicians band.
Yeah.
We're not in the limelight of Hollywood and stuff.
When you think about it, with all the amount of bands that there are out there, how many are really in that anyway?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Lyman from the Warped Tour said it best. I had a friend ask him, so is Dave's band big? You know, like, is the Big D guy's big band? And he goes like this, well, I'll tell it to you like this. They've been around for 14 or 15 years, and they're always relevant. And I come across bands that are super big, but they only last 6 months. You know what I mean? So it's interesting. It's really weird. Something like that.
You guys also wrote a short film entitled Doped Up Dollies on a One-Way Ticket to Blood. Which
first,
is a name that should
first entrance of this question.
So should sound pretty familiar to most of your fans. So what inspired you guys to write that, and how can interested people donate to your Kickstarter page?
Nice. Hey, good, first one. we were on Warped Tour in 2007. When was Rancid on? Seven?
Five.
Wow.
Was that long ago? Is that the last one?
Wow, yeah. So 2005, Rancid was on tour, and but Travis Barker was there. So is that the
No, 2005 was the Transplants.
Okay, my bad. So the Transplants were on tour, and they had this girl, Rachel, amazing film person, filming and doing documentaries for them. And then one laundry day in, like, Canada, I was doing laundry next to her randomly, and she does films. And she told me to do an exercise where write a 3-minute horror and a 7-minute horror. And the 3-minute horror was this one called We Gotta Eat, and the 7-minute horror is Doped Up Dollies.
Cool.
And we were gonna film it together, but as things go, you know, but still had the screenplays, and so that's how it started.
Very nice.
Yeah, and then for the time that we couldn't get the film made, we just kind of transcended it with making them real people, and that's our backup singer.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I know you guys don't have a whole lot of time here, but what have you all been listening to recently, and what can you recommend to other listeners?
Let's see. The last records I bought.
Ooh, that's a good
bought. I bought a new Gorillaz record. I bought I don't know.
But what are we listening to right now?
Yeah.
Just the same stuff we've been listening to. It's not like we found anything new.
Yeah. No, new stuff's good. I like the Budos band.
Yeah.
Kind of came. Cool. That was pretty good. And I always say, you know, DJ BC is always coming out with new stuff. We've worked with him a little bit. And
nice.
He's got this new, a new J on Earth, which is Jay-Z mashed up with some dude. I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah.
New J on Earth.
Okay.
Good. He did War Leans and the Beastie.
Okay.
I like mashups. I mean, if you can't get any good music, because, you know, I mean, I guess our generation's kind of plateaued, at least we got some really creative dudes mashing up our favorite records, so
yeah.
We can listen to them again.
Keep it fresh. I listen to a lot of, like, acoustic guitar stuff.
Just kind of chilling out.
Cool.
Chris Murray's amazing.
Yeah, I've not heard of him.
Before. Oh, Chris Murray's amazing. Start from the beginning, though. Don't, you know, with the 4-track adventures of Chris Murray.
I will definitely, I will definitely do that. Thank
Very
you.
Nice. Yeah,
thanks. Good.
It's good for like if you're having people over.
Oh, totally.
It sets your house in a vibe that people go, "What is this?"
Yeah. And the new Beastie Boys album.
Yeah, that was
they're jamming on
that. Yeah, the Ska song.
They're not new.
Nope.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, and then one more thing. Actually, a couple friends and I have a, like this, we have a record club, so we basically every Saturday night, everybody brings a record,
wow.
And we sit down and listen through the whole thing.
Like
so actually, the last, yeah, like a vinyl record and digital. And so, I mean, it's a pretty cool thing, because we've been, actually, the at the last one, we listened to Strictly Rude all the way through. So, and then one of our friends, Tyler, happened to mention that, and he's like 18, and he listens to all these different. He listens to like Horse the Band, and like he listens to like Chubby Checkers. He'll listen to pretty much anything. So he listens to tons of stuff, and pretty much is. He declared that Strictly Rude was the album that saved modern ska.
I kind of agree.
Yeah,
it happened.
Yeah. We all agreed after we heard it. I mean, it wasn't the first time that we heard it.
Time it dropped.
Yeah.
Because I do not appreciate the bubblegum circusness that the 90s, the early 90s brought to ska. Because it's destroyed it for us. The ska, what ska is. I mean, ska has nothing to do with the early 90s bands. They don't. And that's
California.
Or California. California ruined ska. And, I mean, it's a dark, seedy style of music that, I mean, if you're going to start from step one, would be more black and white than balloons in color. And they fucked it up. And they really messed it up. And it's amazing. You know, it's like, it's kind of what new metal does to metal, you know?
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
And I think they should state that and apologize.
I think so, too.
They should.
Yeah, but the four bands that I think we can all kind of nonchalantly know, they should apologize. They fucked it up.
Well said.
And we helped get it back.
It's true. It really is. I mean, seriously, that wasn't the first time that we listened to it.
Yeah.
It was the first time we listened to it on vinyl. It's the first time I listened to it on vinyl.
Yeah.
And, of course, as most vinyl albums sound, fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So it was just a really cool and a little bit of a different way to hear the album.
Yeah. Instead of, it sounds much better.
Yeah. Hearing like, you know, yeah, that CD sounds okay,
there's
but when you cut out, when you cut out the highs and the lows and you just keep the mids, like all the damn record producers and like all the, they just compress it and then just, you know, they don't have the full quality sound. And
another one. Do it at 45 or 45 super slow.
We listened to it at 45.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what he does. And our new vinyls. We did that, didn't we? We did that. I forgot.
Well, the new records.
You're going to say the new vinyl.
New records on vinyls.
Cool.
Two discs. Red and blue. Is it all? Are the red and blues all on one? Or like one red and one blue?
Well, they're both black. But then we have the special
notes.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know what they are.
I just recently got addicted to buying vinyl records, and it was as of like 6 months ago.
Cause that's great. I'm so happy people are back with it.
Because I listened, the first one I heard was Good News for People Who Love Bad News by Modest Mouse. Oh, man. When the drums kick in for Float On, God.
On vinyl.
My God.
And there's nothing
that just sounded amazing.
There's nothing
putting
your life on hold to sit the fuck down.
And just listen,
it's just amazing.
Seriously,
yeah.
We sit down for 5 hours, and everyone brings an album, and
I mean, that's what we used to do back in the day. We used to take Iron Maiden records and Nirvana records, put them in the record player, and sit like a powwow and go like this.
It's awesome.
It's a vibe. And just to be another add to my naysayerness to 90s ska, good way to kind of understand why early 90s ska was so bad is... That's when Paris Hilton got famous, and that's what America was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Colorful Paris Hilton stuff. I mean, Limp Bizkit was big, Korn. It was all
the new metal shit.
Trash.
Yeah. You had all of a sudden.
Oh, definitely.
It was like it became very apparent that, you know, like bands were being pushed for marketability. And it was just how canned and how applicable and how wide range can this crowd be that we sweep you in and
it's
god
awful.
We make you listen to this.
Yeah. And it's
what gets the push.
You know, you never know what could have happened with ska if it still had the madness specials vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, sure, we're we're kind of, some people would say we're bad because we kind of like the whole Bad Brains outlook at it, like punk and dub, and then we throw a special ska in it. But they're wrong. We're awesome.
You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
You guys are all wrong. We're the best.
We're pretty awesome.
Good luck.
So